Welcome back to Art Beat with the National Gallery of the Cayman Islands. On today's show, Jessica sits down with young Caymanian artists John Reno Jackson and Simon Tatum to discuss their creative career's trajectory. The conversation took place as part of the National Gallery's Business of Art program, which provides creatives with free professional development webinars to support their small businesses. It came on the heels of Jackson's first National Gallery solo show, A Heron Amongst the Storm, exhibited in the Dart Auditorium Community Gallery from June 4th to August 12th, 2022. Over to Jessica for her conversation with Reno and Simon.
Well, hi, Simon and Reno and everyone else who's joined in. Thanks for coming to our talk this evening, our creative careers discussion. So my name is Jessica Ebanks, and I'm the Community Engagement Coordinator at the National Gallery of the Cayman Islands. So I'm here in Cayman, as is Reno, and Simon is joining us from Nashville. So thank you for making it this evening. So we will be recording this talk so that it'll be available on our website and our blog afterwards as a resource for anyone who's interested in learning more about Simon and Reno's practices and any tips they have for other young artists or Caymanians who are interested in joining the arts field. So we'll start off with some introductions. I have both of your bios printed out, so I don't know if you want me to give the professional spiel or if you just wanted to introduce yourselves.
My name is John Reno Jackson. I'm an interdisciplinary artist based in the Cayman Islands, and I'm going to be moving to London to continue my education at UCL this September. And most of my work is kind of going between what it means to be us. I think it's a conversation that a lot of artists my age and a lot of artists regionally are dealing with, is our identity. And so most of my work revolves around that, and also kind of decontextualizing and subverting what is acceptable presentation-wise in art. So it's kind of like my two things.
Right. And Simon, coming to us live from Nashville.
Live from Nashville, yeah. So hi, everybody. I'm Simon Tatum, also an interdisciplinary artist. And my work also deals with identity politics and also with cultural exchange. And more recently, the subject that I've been focused on is the idea of tourism and trade, and imagery and advertisements that I've made alongside that.
Yeah, well, thank you both. And the reason that I wanted to, why I reached out to both of you is because I think you have had some interesting parallels as to, you know, your backgrounds and where you're at now. And obviously you've each had your own unique paths, but I know you went to school together and you're both, you know, young Caymanians who are pursuing art professionally, which is not very common on our small island. And you've both done some similar residencies and you're kind of navigating the scene here in your own ways. So I thought it would be an interesting conversation between the two of you, since you've had these kind of parallel but diverging practices and paths right now. So Reno, I know you are about to head off to start your BFA in London in September, and Simon, you have recently graduated from your MFA last year. So Reno, can you tell us a little bit about the program that you're entering?
Yeah, so I'm entering my Bachelor of Fine Arts at UCL, Slade College of Art, Slade School of Fine Art. And the reason why I picked UCL, I think, was just because of the structure of the school. They kind of give you a space and they just let you do, it's non-modular, they just let you do what you need to do. And for me, I felt like I needed an environment that allowed me to just kind of do my own thing. But also the history of the school and the surrounding area, I have access to so many things that, I can go sit in sociology lectures, I can go do all kinds of things. So for me, it just made sense to, if I wanted to continue my education, or start my education rather, to go to UCL. So yeah, it's kind of why I picked it.
Great. Yeah. Simon, which I know you've been a few different places in the US. So you did your bachelor's in Missouri, correct?
Yeah, University of Missouri.
Okay. And then your MFA, you recently graduated from Kent School of Fine Art, yeah?
Yeah. Kent State University.
Okay.
I did the MFA at Kent State University in sculpture and expanded media. For undergrad, I did a bachelor's, which was visual arts with an emphasis in drawing, and I also did art history and multicultural studies alongside that.
Mm-hmm. So how did you make the switch from kind of more an art history, cultural studies into sculpture? What was your thought process?
Yeah, I kind of gone back and forth between administrative working for the arts and then the actual making of art. So when it came to doing the master's, I wanted to really give myself some more resources, and I wanted to try working in some materials that I only kind of, I only began exploring at the end of my undergraduate degree. So I kind of wanted resources and time to re-explore that area, but also I wanted to be able to write a thesis alongside it. So I wanted to do a program where I was making a new body of work through sculpture and expanded media, but have a piece of research that could be written alongside of it. So that was the thought process with the master's. I applied to a couple different programs. I wasn't the type of person that applied to like a lot of programs at once. I just applied to two of them. One was in the UK and one was in the US. And the option in the UK didn't work out, and the option in the US did, and that was kind of why I went. But Kent State University in particular, I applied to it because that is where Davin Ebanks, who is another really well-known Caymanian artist, that's where he's working. And I was at the National Gallery working in the curatorial department when I met Davin. And we had good conversations about art school in particular, just what it was like to be a student artist and what it was like to be an artist working in academia after you do a sort of student artist program. And he was talking about his program, and I thought it sounded great. And in my mind, it seemed like a really interesting idea to be a student artist from Cayman who could study under a professor who was a Caymanian artist. Mm-hmm. Because I feel like in a lot of the larger islands, that's how the connections work. You have professors from Cuba or Jamaica or elsewhere, some of the larger islands who are working in the U.S. or the U.K. or in Europe. And that's a sort of connection for people who want to do research within the institutions where those professors are. And Davin was kind of that only option. And his work has, at least the subjects, had a lot of similarities to things I was also interested in. So I applied and I went.
Yeah, and I think that's good too, just to have that connection point, you know, because there's so many options, I'm sure. And to know that somebody else has walked there before you and can kind of help you through. Good. Yeah. And, you know, how did you select your school, Reno? Did you apply to a few different programs, or had you, you know, were you familiar with Slade? I know it's a well-regarded program, so.
Well, for me, I basically picked three options. I had my safety option, and then I picked Goldsmiths because I heard they're very experimental. And then I had my like top of the top option, which was UCL. Mm-hmm. And my academic background is pretty much non-existent, so I figured that I was only going to get into my safety option. And as the weeks went by and the interviews kept coming and stuff like that, when push came to shove and I could choose between all, I got into all three. So I just said, well, UCL is the school that I wanted to go to 5-6 years ago, and they want me to come. So that's just kind of why, because like I said, I looked into the program and the way that it's set up, and it's non-modular. So for me, that was really important because like I struggle with academic structure. So for me to have a school that kind of is like pinnacle academia, but then they're kind of flexible, that just, it allowed me to be in an environment where I could learn and have access to things. So for me, that was, like I said earlier, that's just the main reason why I picked the school. And I was fortunate enough that they kept calling me. So, you know, I ended up just getting the opportunity that I always wanted. So yeah. Yeah, I was pretty shocked. I didn't believe it, actually, to be honest.
That's great.
What about London, Reno? I mean, you've been to London before, right? And it's like one of the centers of the art world. What does that mean to you, studying over in that city?
Yeah, that's a good question. Well, when I was there the first time, when I was doing my foundational course, I don't know, I just kind of fell in love with the energy of the city. I mean, you could go from place to place to place to place to place, and there's always something happening from one. It's like Cayman, sort of, but just on a bigger scale, because Cayman is such a multicultural melting pot of a society these days, and I guess kind of always has been to some extent. But when you go to London, it's like that times 1,000. You know, and so you're just constantly enveloped in these different cultures, and it turns into this homogeny of things to do and things to absorb. So for me, especially in my practice and just the things that I'm interested in, going to London is just, I don't know, it just seems kind of like that, my Mecca, you know? But yeah, I'm kind of a little nervous because the last time I was in London, it was a little too crazy for me. But I think I've matured as a human being, so I think I should be good this time. Yeah.
Yeah, it's totally different too once you know that you'll be there for a few years and your life. You know, it's not just like, oh, I'm visiting and I'm gonna have as fun as possible in a couple weeks. But
Exactly. Because, well, the first time it was there just for foundation. So I just was there. And then once the foundation was finished, I was just like, oh, well, I don't know what to do now. What do I do now? You know, because when you do a foundation, you don't really necessarily have that plan of, well, I'm going, you might. But for me, I was just like, what school do I go to? You know, because I could have went to Edinburgh. I could have went to Newcastle. And, you know, that's a completely different atmosphere to try to involve yourself in. So I just took a break from it for a while. And now I'm back on the horse.
Yeah, and that's interesting, too. I think, you know, coming from Cayman, coming from such a small community that doesn't have the wealth of, you know, arts experiences. You know, we occasionally have concerts or festivals or plays, mm-hmm. but we don't have that right at our fingertips. So I think that's another thing to consider. Like, if you're coming from a small place, what do you want to get out of not only like your academic experience, but also just the, you know, your social experience as well.
Yeah.
And
seeking
somewhere, hopefully, that can provide you with inspiration and other opportunities beyond just school.
True. And I think one of the other reasons why I took a while to do it is just I think when you're from Cayman, it was like when I came back and people were like, oh, you're doing art. And they'd be like, why are you doing art?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was always like, because it was just a foundation. So they were like, oh, well, you know, you can just, once you're done with that little hobby, you can go and get your little associates in business or whatever. And, you know, it never was like, oh, okay, keep going. So I think it took me a while to kind of get comfortable with the idea of it again. And, but over the last 4 years or so, you know, I've built up a network of people, including Simon, who, you know, and we've just, I think the art scene in Cayman is growing. I think it's developing. Cayman Art Week is a great example. I mean, so there's, the wheels are in motion. So for me, one of the main things of going off to school now is also just to get more exposure. So then when I come back, I feel like I can help add to that. Because I think as much as I'm doing right now, I think I'd really like to know more about my craft, you know,
yeah.
So.
Yeah, yeah, it's always good to push yourself and expand that. And
yeah,
that's one of the other questions that I wanted to ask, because well, I think it's interesting that the people who are on this call right now are joining us from Nashville and maybe haven't been to Cayman or maybe aren't familiar with Cayman. But so Cayman is very small. We only have about 70,000 people here. And the career paths, the expected kind of career paths for people of our generation is a bit more traditional. I guess kind of like anywhere, but here especially, there's a few expected or acceptable options. Law, business, finance are kind of the traditional paths. So to pursue art professionally, to be a practicing artist, to be a working artist, is quite a courageous step for you both. And so I wanted to. I was wondering if you could speak to that a little bit more. Like, how did you decide that this was something that you did want to pursue in a professional capacity?
Mm-hmm. Simon might have a better answer. Mine is more so I just kind of fell into it, and then it just started to develop and snowball into something that I saw. So for me, the way I like to look at things is there's like a, if you want to see a change in society, you can't complain about the lack of change. You actually just have to go out and make the change yourself. Or create the system yourself that allows other people agency and the change that you desire. And so for me, I just saw that there was a huge gap. I just felt like being a creative person in general, there was always some sort of stigmata attached to it or some sort of a lack of funding or a lack of attention. And so for me, it started just as a way to express myself, but I quickly realized that it's more of a vessel for, you know, talking about other people's thoughts and feelings as well, you know, not necessarily for them, but with them.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. That's how I kind of fell into it. I don't know about Simon. I know Simon likes to read books and stuff. So
I think we have a similar mindset. I'm just, because it's so funny, Reno, that you and I went to like high school together as well.
Mm-hmm.
I think we both had something similar where it was like these sort of expected career paths for people our age wasn't an option that we wanted to do. And for me, I thought to myself, it would just be death if I was in, I laugh at this now, in an office doing a lot of computer work, which is exactly kind of what I do for my day job now.
Oh, there you go.
But I thought to myself, I need to do something where I'm reading a lot, where I'm producing a lot. And I came up with this idea that I was either going to be a writer, a preacher, and then I gave up on that, and like an illustrator. So I thought that I was going to become this great illustrator and go and work for, like, you know, Disney or something.
Yeah, there you go.
That was the idea I had. And then when we did our sort of, you know, post-secondary internships, and I ended up at the gallery with Carrie Ann was there at the time. So I was working with Carrie Ann, and I was like, wow, this is really cool. I didn't even know that this could be something
working. Exactly.
That was how I started my career, was working in a museum for an internship, thinking I could do this every day. And then I decided to go after art history. And then when I was going to school and doing art history, you were encouraged to make art, to learn how to write about art. And I decided I like making art better than I like writing about art.
True.
And so I became the artist.
Fair enough.
You know,
do you think that, do you think you would prefer writing about contemporary art over historical?
Yeah, I do like writing about contemporary art. I feel like writing for me now, when it comes to writing about artwork after doing the thesis, I like doing it as a sort of like a journal process, writing about like a particular project that happened rather than doing like an overview of a practice or focusing on a very specific subject. I found that difficult with doing the thesis, and I thought that the way that thesis were set up for the MFA, when you were basing it around the exhibition you were producing, I thought that that was really a helpful way to engage with research. You had a physical project that the writing responded to.
Are you familiar with this publication?
Yeah,
the Brooklyn Reel. It's kind of like what you're talking about, like where people, it's like more individualistic. It's not just like the kind of thesis side where, you know, it's more of a dissection of a certain work. Like there's some essays in these books that are like one painting and it's 10 pages long. And I just feel like, is that what you meant?
Yeah, a little bit like that. But I think also with writing, what I found out with writing, was doing the MFA and the BFA and working with so many students who were in like the art history programs, is that writing, just like the studio practice, after a while becomes competitive. When it comes to like building research and getting it published and getting support behind it.
Yeah.
I enjoy writing as a process of reviewing a project that's done. But when it comes to writing as your sort of main avenue for the research, I don't think I have that in me. It's just not, I'm much better at producing the projects. You know, I'm much better at making the artwork. So yeah, I don't know. It is funny to look back on it now. I was saying this actually because Ali's on the call. I was saying this to Ali the other day, that if I had been exposed, I think, to some different subject when we were in school, like when I watch some things like, when I listen to like podcasts on astrology and things like that, if I had been exposed to some of those subjects earlier on in my education, that maybe I would have leaned more into them, because I like the sort of questions that they're asking, and it's still a sort of research-based practice. But I don't ever doubt the fact of pursuing the arts. And one of the things I realized was doing the master's, and I think just nowadays too, is that the arts is so interdisciplinary, and there's all this hype around collaborative practices. You attach the arts to so many other things.
Yeah.
And so I feel like in that way, it's really nice to have a practice that can be attached to so many other forms of research. So
sure.
I feel like, if anything, maybe I will go and become an astrologist later on in my, you know, 40s.
But why not? I mean,
why not?
That adds to your discipline.
Yeah, exactly.
It adds to it. Like, I think we live in a post-structuralist world, right? Like, where everything is interconnected, like what you're saying. Like, there's not just one thing for one thing. Everything kind of has a connection to something else. And yeah, it's a beautiful thing. But then, I don't know, what I always try to figure out is how can you use these sort of narratives to create a language that makes sense artistically, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Because then it might become too vague for people, which is one of my things that I've always worried about as an artist, is when you make something that might be too heady or wordy, or, you know, like if you know, because you've studied stuff and you're like, ah, yes, I can see it. And then you make it, and then people are just like, what? You know what I mean? Like, what are you talking about? And like, I guess the question I'm trying to ask is, do you ever have trouble finding that fine line between intellectualism and, I don't know, what's the word? Oh, God, my brain's going blank. Intellectualism and accessibility, yeah. Inclusivity and intellect, like, you know what I mean? Like, I mean, not to say that they're polar opposites, but just to say, like, to balance that thing where, you know, you could write up a 20, 30 page essay on one painting, which is great. But then, like, you know, someone could look at it and say, I see a grapefruit. And then that, like, completely, you know, breaks down everything you just said, right? It's like, I don't know. Do you ever struggle with that as an artist?
I think what I struggle with is...
Or maybe do you struggle with the criticism? Like, like when people say stuff like that, like you spend a lot of time making something and then someone goes, oh, yeah, I see a leaf. And then you're like, is that a judgmental thing or should you champion that? You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. I don't know. I just wondering.
I feel like criticism for me has changed, or the way I deal with criticism has changed, especially after doing the master's.
Mm.
Because doing the MFA, I mean, and Davin actually said this to me when I was studying with him, and he was one of the people on my thesis committee. He was like, you know, I'm going to sit here, and I'm going to talk to you until nobody wants to talk anymore, and then I'm going to keep on talking after that. And he was like, because when you leave the boundaries of art school, nobody's ever going to care that much about you unless you really have this piece of research that someone wants to dive into and write about for, like, their own research, right?
Yeah.
You really start to get established. But when it comes to, like, the sort of peer review, mm-hmm. you're never going to get this sort of attention. And it was a really love-hate relationship. I mean, it was amazing to sit there and talk about art for hours and hours and hours, and that became your life, like, making art and talking about art.
Mm-hmm.
But I think after leaving it, there were so many conversations that happened within art school that I just knew weren't ever going to happen again.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like my issue has to do with accessibility. I want to make things that I don't want to compromise what it is I'm interested in, but I do want to make sure that it's seen by somebody besides myself and my small group of art school or other artists. You know, I want it to be able to reach more people. And honestly, Reno, that is one of the things I admire so much about you. You're so good at social media and socializing.
Thank you,
and
sir.
So many people through your work. And that is something, that is a skill that I continue to build on. That's something I continue to have to work on.
Thanks, man. I appreciate that. Like, that, the reason why I asked that question as well is because it's something that every day I think about when I'm making work, is that relationship between those two things. And I think it comes from the fact, like what we were saying earlier, Cayman is such a small society. And it's a very conservative, sometimes judgmental society that, you know, like even my most recent show, I've had it mostly good reviews, but some people have walked in and been like, nah, I don't like this stuff. Nope, this is not it. And I'm like, I don't know. And it's just like, I tried to make it, that's what I'm saying, like finding that balance between accessibility and inclusivity. Yeah. And then also trying to, have a message in the work, an overall theme in the work. But I think that the I've been talking to a lot of people about this recently, and I think it just boils down to authenticity. I think if you as a person really are just trying to express raw human emotion, as cliche as it sounds, and your intent is there, most people from a primal sort of stance, like a primordial thing, will feel that intention. Yeah, that shines through over the hyperbole in the words. People will feel that sort of rigor. They'll be like, whoa, I don't know. Like, I don't know what this is. I mean, I hear it all the time. I don't know what I'm looking at, but I feel something.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I witnessed that with your work too, as well at Art Week. I think we were just chatting and someone came up to me and they thought I was you because we have, you know, the hair and stuff. No, you, you're the artist boy, you. And I was like, no, not me. I mean, yeah, I am, but that stuff. And they're like, no, yeah, that stuff right there. I'm like, no, that's Simon. And they're like, who's Simon? And then I found you, and then they were like so excited, and I could tell this was someone who had never really been around art like that before, but they were just so enthralled with what you made. And that's what I was saying as well. Like I agree with what you said to me, the praise you gave me. I think you do the same thing. I think it's a balance of finding that sweet spot. And I think it's something that the global art world needs to have, because I feel like, I don't know, it's just an important conversation. And that's advice I would give to young people who are getting into art as well, is to really focus on your craft and like who you are, and then allow you can do research-based projects, but don't allow that to be the project. Like allow it to influence what you make, not direct like what you make. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. That's a good point. Yeah.
Yeah, because I see that happen so much. Like I was trying to mentor a kid, someone last year, and they were obsessed with Basquiat, and I kept giving them books about Basquiat, but I would also give them books about other artists. And at the end of the mentorship, they painted Basquiat paintings in with their words. And I was like, I could see the momentum that they were going in, and I never criticized it because it's the start of their artistic journey. But it was also the idea that, you know, like leaning too far is like, you need to start to break out of that sort of comfort zone sort of thing as well. I know it's such a trick. Being an artist is like, well, I don't even know what it is still. So,
but it does.
I don't know.
I think it. I think one of the things I'm pulling from what you're saying, mm-hmm. which I think I can attach it to both the Art Week events, but then also what you're saying here is the mentorship. Is that like when you're doing an art practice and you go to school for it, one of the things that I feel like I didn't estimate and I would give as advice for young Caymanians or young creatives in the Caribbean who are interested in pursuing the arts is that the arts is a very social type of practice. There's a lot of things outside of the classroom of just making mm-hmm. and listening to lectures. There's a lot of project openings or project viewings. There's hangings. Do exhibitions or hang your work in various places and invite people to that. There's parties. There's public lectures. There's lots of things like that. But that's kind of where the arts expands, right? Like you have so many conversations that happen within the studio that are insular, and you have things that happen within the workshops with the professors and your peers, which is also exciting. But then when it's put on display, you're kind of engaging with the public, right? And one of the issues I had and why I decided to go away to art school from so young is I didn't think at that time in Cayman there was any community for me to have a conversation with about my practice besides the things that were happening at the National Gallery. I mean, fast forward now 10 years, and when I was in Cayman, you know, a few weeks ago for Art Week, it's completely different. It's like night and day.
True.
I mean, I was exhausted after the events of Art Week. There's so many things going on.
Yeah.
And I think that's great. I mean, and that goes, that a lot of that has to do with artists like you, Reno, who have been on islands, and you've kept at your practice, and you've found ways to engage with people that aren't necessarily interested or involved in creative practices. And then the other thing has to do with commercial galleries. And then most importantly, I'll put on top of all that, has to do with places like the National Gallery that champion it from a different perspective and can help, can help be a sort of center where all of these different factors can merge. And then when you have something like Art Week, which is more of a commercial event,
mm-hmm.
it's all of those factors are then like melting together and you create this atmosphere. But it's night and day, really. I mean, I felt really, it was a really special moment to be there in Art Week and showing new works and have so much engagement. I had other times when I brought work home and unless it's at the National Gallery, nobody's going to see it.
Yep.
Nobody's going to come.
No, yeah.
Yeah.
I agree. Yeah. That's one of the saddest things about Cayman community that I've noticed in the past few years is that people sometimes say, well, there's nothing to do, or I wish that I had access to this or that. And it's there, you know, like, you know, it is available, but it's almost like there's a sense of self or being afraid of presenting who you are creatively or personally, you know, like almost like, I was talking to a musician who's like very talented and he was saying, well, man, I'd be having these shows and like I have about 6 people show up. And I'm like, but why? Like, I might want to know why. And then he's like, I don't know. And so I started to think about it and it's almost like, but then you see people online, like, or when he said he would see people in public, they'd be like, oh, I love what you do. I love what you do. Da, 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 da. But it's like, but you're not at the show, you know? And I think there's something that's one of the things I really want to address in Cayman and help figure out is why does that happen? Where is the support when people seem to be crying out for it? They're always talking about X, Y, Z, but they never, when it's right in front of their face, they're just like, oh, that's not for me. That's not my kind of thing. You know, I mean, I can't even count how many times I've done a project publicly and I've had people tell me, go back to my country because they don't think I'm even from Cayman because they're like, why would this Caymanian boy make this art or something? Caymanians don't do this. And it's like such a strange phenomenon. I think that's the one thing that I'd love to see progress in the next 10 years is support, community support, people being a little bit more comfortable with stepping out of their comfort zone, you know, just being a little bit more like, hey, you know what? I might not get it, but maybe my kids will like it, or maybe my grandma likes this stuff, or maybe, you know, bring the family, let's support it. If it's not for us, if it's not that good, hey, at least we tried it, you know, but I think there's a, there's like a fear, a quiet fear in our community about that. So yeah. I don't know. I've noticed that. It's a strange phenomenon.
Yeah, and I think you're right. It is changing, and it has changed in a few years. But I mean,
yeah.
You know, are feeling threatened and kind of disenfranchised by like the pace of development and, you know, the rapid population expansion and everything like that, that I think people are really kind of clinging on to notions of maybe what they want to protect. And sometimes new ideas can feel threatening. But I think, you know, there is definitely, like you said, that kind of that undercurrent of, okay, things are changing. You know, we do have more opportunities here now, things like Art Week and more young artists coming up like you both who are, you know, making an impact in your way. And I hope that, you know, it is becoming a more kind of encouraging place for young creatives because we don't want people to just feel like there's nothing here for them, you know? And I think that's what's great about both of you. Like Simon, you have lived abroad for several years, but you always come back and make projects here and submit to exhibitions here. Because I think we want to, you know, continue that conversation and not lose all of our talented young people because they feel like there's no place for them here. I feel like, you know, we as young Jimenez have to, like you said, Reno, earlier, make that change. You know, you see it that it's no one else is doing it. So we kind of owe that to our community to be the ones, you know.
And not only just the community now, but the future community.
Sure.
A lot of young people, future generations shouldn't have to feel like, you know, that it isn't necessarily an option for them. They should feel like it's an option for them if they want to go that path in life. You know, I think this is why I've always never been chimey or jivey with traditional education, you know, because I think that, you know, each person in life has something that they can do really well, but society tells them that they have to do this to survive. They have to do this to make money to do the next thing and to get the house and get the wife and get the kids and all that, you know, all that stereotypical stuff that we've been fed. And I think that, you know, there's an artist in every primary class, there's at least one or two artists. And there's also one or two boat captains and there's one or two this. But I think if we remove stigmata from certain things, we can allow people to do what they're really good at and what they're passionate at. I mean, you know how it is in Cayman. Like, if you wanted to work in the food industry, people would laugh at you and be like, oh, phew, man, like, why would you want to work in the food? Why would you want to be a cook? Because they don't make no money. It's like we've become obsessed with this idea of capital and who has more money than XYZ. And I think it's a dangerous thing because, you know, it undermines people's spirit. And I think but that's what I've noticed. And I think, you know, I think it is changing. I think it's just it's going to take time to allow people to come out of their shells and really feel comfortable. I mean, I think that's what I was trying to say earlier. It's not that people here aren't interested in art and stuff and they don't want to come out and support. And I was never trying to say that. I think that they're just not comfortable. And I think that it will take time for them to realize that it is a safe place and it is a safe community for young people and old people and everybody to come out and make art, and not just art, humanities, performance art, theater. I mean, our theater stuff is also in quite a weird state of flux as well. Like, I remember when I was a kid, we used to have summer camps that would teach us traditional crafts. We would do sing-song stuff, give me story, rundown, all that kind of stuff. It's not happening right now.
It is happening right now.
Oh, it is? It started back?
The last 2 weeks, they've been doing their summer camp at the Cultural Foundation next
week. Oh, see, there you go. So it's starting back.
They've been doing their crystal pan, and they've been doing their crafts and everything.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
So that's the first time they've done that in years, though.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
But it's back, and they've got like 50 kids there this week, so that's really encouraging to see.
Yes, that's amazing. I love that. That's the kind of stuff I love to hear, you know. I didn't even know that.
Yeah, they're back. And we've been getting lots of other, like, summer camp groups coming in for tour.
Wow.
Every day we've been, like, here at the gallery, we've had tons of, camp groups coming
in. Well, I know that the gallery has always been 100% on top of their stuff.
Getting the people here, too, and it's great to, you know, more and more groups are reaching out to us and wanting to come over. So,
encouraging. But one of the interesting things as well is, like what you were saying, how Simon had to go overseas. There's also, I mean, it's not just Simon. It's like, I'm about to go overseas. Davin's gone overseas. Bendel Hyde's the most famous, recognizable Caymanian artist ever. Lived overseas basically his entire career. You did, too.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah. that's a Bendel. But you did, too.
Yeah, I did. So.
You did, too. I mean, I think a lot of the artists have, I mean, it's like the residency program that I'm going to on Saturday. And that Simon went to as well. And but that residency program, I think, has been designed to have these conversations. It's an inter-island, sort of thing where every year, I think, every year, is it every year or every other year? every other year.
I think it's, well, I mean, it's been all thrown off by COVID, right?
But yeah,
I,
true,
I
believe true.
It was supposed to be every year.
Originally. Every year, yeah. So because of COVID, yeah. But Caribbean Link, me and Simon, well, Simon's attended it and I'm about to attend it. And I think that the way it works, roughly speaking, is that each of the islands in the Caribbean, we all meet at a residency program in Aruba, and they send over an artist from each island, or they try to. And there's an inter-regional conversation that happens with young people. And I think stuff like that, like one of the main reasons why I'm going off overseas to get my degree as well, is to come back here to set up something like that here. I feel like setting up that kind of thing in Cayman would be essential to continuing that sort of development. Also, another thing I'd love to do is set up a program at UCCI. I've been talking to the sociology professor. I'm like, dude, how hard would it be to get just one class with some paint and say that you can come here for an associate's or foundational degree, like what I did in the UK, get a foundational degree in art, so that way then you can transfer to a bigger school in Miami or wherever you want to go. And I mean, the conversations just need to be started, and they have been started, which is the beauty of it. So.
I
guess I'll latch on to Caribbean Link, Torino, since you brought that up, because that's a really good example of the sort of like cross-pollinization of practices and education that's kind of needed to keep, in my opinion, the sort of art circle within an island like healthy and flowing.
Yeah.
Because that program was specifically designed because it was recognized within the region that there are boundaries, right? So there's boundaries from island to island about how artists from one island might communicate with the other. And then there's also major boundaries between what is the sort of like colonial language that's been placed on the island. Are they a Dutch-based, you know, Dutch-speaking island? Are they Spanish-speaking, French-speaking, or English-speaking? So those were recognized by artists of an older, or not older, but a different generation from ours, ones who had gone away to the UK and to the US and did their studies there and wanted to figure out how they could basically promote more of the arts on their own island, right? So
true.
People like Elvis Lopez, Annalie Davis, and Holly Bino, who run the program, are key examples of that, but also are other people from other islands who then are constantly sending younger artists to be a part of this sort of program. But the program was set up to bring artists from all the islands together to have this sort of exchange, because one of the things that are recognized, right, is if every island is having an issue like Cayman, that the art scene can become stale, and you have this issue that you either have people leave and they don't come back for a long time, or they leave and never come back, then maybe you could also have something where you have islands from within the regions talking to each other. So an artist from Jamaica could spend some time in Cayman, right, if they make connections through Caribbean Link. And there could be all sorts of different ways that could happen. And for some of the larger islands, like Cuba, Puerto Rico, and Jamaica, there's actually art schools that are
really true.
They have more resources, right?
Yeah, Edna Manley and stuff like that, yeah.
Exactly, yeah. Edna Manley is a key example in Jamaica. But that was also an idea that was sought through Caribbean Link. It was like, okay, there's some islands that have different resources than others, so how can we get younger artists to start having conversations from early on, but by the time they do become more established in their practices, there can be that's like second nature to them, is being able to be in conversation with the other islands and share together.
That makes sense. I mean, yeah, it's grassroots. You know, a lot of things that I always talk about, because I have a sports background, is grassroots. So when you think of things, you always want to start from younger age. You always want to foster and develop that ideology in people from a younger age. So it's all just about education, right? And what they're doing, like you said, is they're finding, connecting people at the age that we're at and saying, well, if you, let's say you end up becoming a curator at a major museum, you now have links to all of the Caribbean people. So you'll be in the know-how. That only helps to build the region in general, you know, that only helps to build awareness in our region. And then you can think about, like me, for example, like what I want to do is come back and figure out how to start like developing young people in order for them to like really feel like it's comfortable for them, you know? And so, but then I'll have that link. And so when people that I've met in the program say, hey, like this guy's doing big stuff for young people, let's try and figure, you know, like it just, that's actually genius. I never even looked at it from that perspective, but that's what it really is about, I think, because it's not just about the exchange that we have as artists there, but it's also the exchanges the entire region, you know, which I think is a beautiful thing, because it's tying the whole region together and helping to figure out, because we all have similar, you know, similar backgrounds. Not that each one is, you know, not unique from each other, but it's a similar story of how the Caribbean all came to be, you know. So that's why I'm really excited for the program, you know. It's run by Anna Lee at Fresh Milk and a few other people. And, yeah, it's going to be a very exhilarating 3 weeks.
Oh, it's going to be amazing. I'm so excited that you're doing that. I'm so excited that a lot of the issues of COVID are not, I mean, they're not past, but we're in a different moment with it now.
Yeah.
Today, you can start bringing people back together again.
Yeah.
I think that's probably one of the most brilliant ideas when it comes to the arts that have happened within the region.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, in my case, from when I did it back in 2016 or 2017, I can't remember, I've met so many of those artists again, and not just like in the region, but outside. I've met, you know, people in Amsterdam, or I've met people in Germany. I it's been really great in that way, to have those contacts made and know that these are people who are also trying to find their own path within a sort of creative career. And you just kind of keep track of each other, right? It becomes a sort of like alumni program, like you get from any sort of art school program. And at least the year I was there too, I'm not sure if they're going to do this with you, Reno, but they had like visiting curators alongside the artists that were selected from the different islands.
Mm-hmm.
So there was 12 islands represented when I was there, but they also had what they called the master artists, or the sort of, who was Humberto Diaz from Cuba, which I thought was a fantastic idea as well, because, I mean, this is, you know, a very key Cuban artist who went through the sort of Isla program. And in my opinion, there is no other program in the region, and, you know, maybe very few in the world that can compare to what's taught in that program.
True, true.
And Reno, both of you have done residencies abroad. I know, Reno, you've been to Portugal, and Simon, you were in, was it Germany a few years ago? So how do you, in terms of like finding those opportunities, how do you seek out residencies?
I think it's 50-50. Sometimes they just, especially with social media, sometimes they'll just reach out to you.
Mm-hmm.
I know that the Caribbean Link reached out to me through the gallery. So it was like mentioned through the web, like the, you know, through that sort of sphere. But Portugal, I reached out to them. There's this beautiful website called Res Artists, and you can just go on it and you can find a plethora of just page after page after page of open calls. And, you just find the one that fits you. I think a lot of people get hung up on becoming famous or all that kind of stuff. And it's the same thing with galleries as well. People always be like, oh, you know, I just want to show my work and make money and be the next Basquiat or whatever. And it's like, I think that just being a being and having fun and meeting people and enjoying life is much more beneficial. So going to a residency program and finding the residency program that really fits your niche, or like finding a gallery that really fits your niche and really understands and respects you as an artist, is 1,000 times more important than being like, oh, which one is super popular? Which one does Kendall Jenner like? Or blah, 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 blah. So usually, you know, I just reached out to this thing in Portugal and I said, hey, I'm an artist. I think you guys have a similar vision to me. And I applied through their process and they came back and said, yeah, come. And residencies are great. You just spend a month or 2 or 3 months or however long just being in a different environment and working on your craft. I don't know what it was like for Simon in Germany, because you were there for like, what, 3 months, 2 months?
I was there for 3 months, yeah. I use Res Artists as well, the same sort of catch hall that you were doing. That's a great, there's that, and there's so many other search engines for residencies that we should probably find and put in this after.
Yeah, Res Artists.
On the website. But yeah, I went to Germany because I was interested in a lot of, like, painters coming from the new Leipzig school, so Niederrach, Babi Schnell, Arno Rink, who's an older generation from the first two I mentioned. And I was kind of studying them within my third year, and bringing them up a lot in my critiques in my third year of my undergrad. And so I had a professor who did a printmaking residency in Germany and knew of Leipzig and said, mm-hmm. we should use this platform and then apply and find something that seems suitable. And I used that and I found LIA, which is the Leipzig International Artist Program, which I would recommend to anybody who has a painting practice, that it's like a huge painting hub. It's amazing studio.
So that's the one you went to?
The one I went to. Oh, okay. Yeah, that was the one I went to.
Cool.
Cool. That was the last time I made a painting. But it was really exciting. And I guess what I would say for residencies is nowadays, I haven't done one in a while, but nowadays if I apply to one, I think about where it is, why I want to be in that area. Like why would I want to go all the way to Germany, to Leipzig? What's the purpose for that?
Right.
What are the expenses attached to that? Because some residencies you can get, they'll have like grants and stipends mm-hmm. attached to it. And then some of them, they're not. You have to pay out of pocket, or you can find outside funding.
Yeah.
I think about where it is, what are the resources attached to it? And like, I realize this now after the fact, but who are the organizers for the residencies? Mm-hmm. I mean, I've made so many contacts and had so many fond memories from the organizers of the two residencies I did. So, mm-hmm. Anna, who was in charge of the Leipzig International Artist Program, was fantastic. I had an art history background, I believe, and had been involved in the sort of Leipzig scene for years. So she knew all of who are now famous artists and knew of all the programs that have grown out of that space over the last 20 years. And she was really great with connecting international artists with those galleries and studios and other local artists. And same thing with Elvis Lopez in Aruba. He is a very well-established visual artist himself, and he knows the island so well, and he knows the scenes in Amsterdam and Rotterdam and places like that so well. And he has this really great way of bringing younger artists in and helping them get involved and make good connections. So I feel like that's a third factor that I would always take into consideration. Now, who organizes the residency? And then again, the first two would be where it is, why do you want to go to that location? And what are the sort of resources that are attached to the residency program?
Yeah, especially if you're going to pay out of pocket.
Yeah.
You got. Yeah, I mean, it sounds like a little like sneaky, but you got to get your money's worth.
Well, I think we both think that way. I mean, different people have different lives, but yeah, I had the money.
You know, fair enough. I agree. I mean, if you're going to pay, like, especially some residencies also aren't that cheap. Some residencies are a couple thousand, $4,000. So if you're going to be putting down that kind of money, you really got to make sure that it is the right thing for you in all aspects. You know, it's like buying a car. You don't want to buy a car that doesn't suit your lifestyle. You know,
yeah,
doesn't make sense.
And I think that is really something to consider. You know, if these are opportunities that you're seeking out because you are still developing your practice and you want to make these connections mm-hmm. and you want to gain this experience, so chances are that you might not have an endless stream of disposable income coming in that can afford you, you know, tickets everywhere and anywhere you want to go. So the, you know, the financial aspect of it can be a real thing to consider. I feel like there's some common threads kind of running through this whole discussion. We talked about making mm-hmm. connections and getting inspiration from elsewhere and kind of melding that into, you know, taking these grander ideas from what you learn along the way and then finding out how that fits in with your own style and your own practice. So kind of circle back and kind of contextualize that a little bit more. So if you've gone off to art school or not, maybe you've done a shorter course or, you know, participated in a residency abroad and you are someone who is in Cayman, then what are some opportunities locally that you've both, you know, participated in? Or say if you're just starting out here, you know, how do you, you know, get an exhibition? How do you build up clients? How do you network within Cayman? What are some of those opportunities that you can seek out here?
Well,
I know it's limited and it's still growing. We've talked about that, but
there are multitudes of avenues. I think it's all dependent on what exactly it is that you want your career to be. Mm-hmm. So if you want to go the more commercial route, you just make sales, lower price point, selling stuff, just, you know, there's plenty of options for that. There's plenty of small commercial galleries. If you're just getting into it, let's say you're a watercolorist and you want to just kind of see if people are interested in purchasing your stuff, there's places like Pure Art, places, you know, you could ask a coffee shop or a thing like that to hang up your stuff. That's a good way to get started and start to build traction. But it's all dependent. Like if you're an experimental artist like me, I've shown stuff outside in the bush. Like, you know, I couldn't find a gallery that I wanted or one that I felt suited me. So I just took all my stuff and put it outside. And, you know, for me, that's what I wanted to do anyway. So I think it's dependent on your voice. I think depending on what exactly you want. And also, you know, people like Donovan, who just joined the call, he has Parcel 110. So that's a great opportunity for you to showcase your work in a more, you know, professional setting, as opposed to like a coffee shop. Or it just depends on which direction you want to take your career. And if you want to go the more educational route, the commercial route, the academic route, or all of them, it's up to you. But like Pure Art, Visual Art Society, the paint night thing at Kamana Day, you know, things going on at Parcel 110, things going on at Pure Art, things going on at the Ritz, in the Ritz Gallery. There's some, a Kennedy Gallery, stuff like that.
Yeah. I absolutely agree with how Rena said that. I feel like figuring out what you want to do is important, and then looking at the options. Like if you want to do more craft things, then there are a lot of workshops and options along that line. If you're interested in just building skills with drawing and painting, there are groups that will meet up and do like plein air drawing or figurative drawing. When it comes to like showing in commercial spaces, yeah, Reno's right. For an island as small as ours, there are a lot of commercial galleries. And there are some that have, which is also more surprising than that, there are some that have lasted a long time, like Pure Art and the Agro Wards Gallery. Those have been around for a while, which is also really great. So if you're wanting to sell and you want to find something, there are those options. But I guess with all of those things considered, what I would say for a young person that it wants to explore more with their creative practice and wants to do something outside of like their own sort of insular practice or just keeping things to themselves is to go out and check these things out, because I feel like that's one boundary that the arts in Cayman and a lot of the time internationally as well doesn't have. It's even though these things all happen in different atmospheres, a lot of like the Visual Arts Society, whether it's Visual Arts Society or Commercial Gallery, there's going to be like free events that you can go to and you can find out for yourself if this is something that you want to explore more. So if you see a posting for an event happening at one of these venues, then just go to it and just meet people and chat. Because again, the arts is a social practice. And so if you want to find out more, you kind of have to go out and see it for yourself.
It's just that art inspires like that way. Like I think people really get involved if it's more of a community aspect, you know, and it's definitely a social thing. Like all the networking, the people you meet, especially nowadays with Instagram and social media, all of that is all social, you know, and I think that that's one of the main avenues for people getting your, I mean, Instagram. Yeah. I mean, we didn't even say that. That's pretty much, that's how a lot of people started to figure out who I was. You know, I just came out of nowhere, really, just posting on Instagram. And then people were like, wait, who are you? And yeah, I just made a lot of connections through that. I think I met Donovan through Instagram. So like, not to call him out every 5 seconds, but yeah, I think I did meet him through Instagram as well. And it's interesting that like, this country is so small, but social media helps. You would think you would know everybody, but even you don't. So social media can still help to
connect
people. And so post anything you want on Instagram. Post ideas, post things that inspire you, post your own artwork, and then find your community. Go out and try everything out and find what feels right to you. Then once you're comfortable, just start developing your voice. And, you know, there's a lot of pressure for people to think that finding an artistic voice is the be all or end all. And I think, I can't remember which artist said it, but I always think about it. And it's that you never really know what you're making even after you die. Like as an artist up until the day you die, you will never finish anything. Like you can make masterpiece after masterpiece after masterpiece after masterpiece. But because we're like a finite thing, like our potential to make, you know what I mean? Like we're not perfect is what I'm trying to say. So just go out and make. And don't worry about perfection, because even masters never made true masterpieces because they didn't have the time. They didn't have the time on earth. So just go out and do whatever you want to do and share it with everybody. And if people judge you, don't worry about it, because there'll be other people who won't judge you. So just do whatever you want. And I mean, I don't know. That's all I got to say.
So, you know, there is a creative community here. You just kind of have to tap into it. And it is still, it's growing and it's here. And so, you know. Come on and join us.
Yeah, but I think it's a global thing too. I think a lot of people, it's a fair thing. I mean, you know, the fear of persecution and it really hurts your sense of self. But I think that, you know, everybody, you know, it's always that thing where you're like, you're so scared to do something and when you actually do it and people are like, oh, oh, that was exciting. I didn't know you could do that. And then you get that little like, oof, wow, people weren't, you know, going to persecute me. It's that internalized thing. Mm-hmm. And I think that most artists do struggle with that anyways, but it's also learning how to use that to your advantage. I think looking at things and judging them also can help you have breakthroughs, but it's how you use it. So if you're a young artist and you feel like nothing's working and it's not this and it's not that and blah, 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 it's also, that's natural. That comes with every artist. Like, I look at stuff all the time and I'm just like, why did I make that? You know, it's not like I'm some demigod person who just, you know, shoots out masterpieces or whatever. I wouldn't even, you know, I don't classify myself like that. So I think that that's the other beautiful thing about imperfection as well, is that it allows for balance. So, yeah, I think just young people being more comfortable with themselves and feeling like I can do this, and it globally, not just in Cayman, but also in Cayman, just an artist as well, just feeling comfortable in their discomfort is quite an admirable trait to have.
Yeah, well said. And I will say, because we were talking about Cayman Art Week earlier, that I'll bring this back around. One of the things I admired about the events that were happening at Cayman Art Week is that there was people like Reno who are really taking charge and bringing a lot of energy to these different events that are happening within that sort of art fair. But then also I'm seeing people that, you know, we grew up with or we went to school with who are now interested in exploring the art scene through these events.
Yeah.
And that, I think that is key, right? It's getting more people to feel comfortable to come into the space so that there is some sort of cross-pollination. Getting people in the door. And if you're not the person that wants to make art, that's fine too. Just come and be part of the conversation and see what's going on. Just take part in things.
Yeah.
It's really important for Cayman going forward. And I've seen great strides. And again, being in Art Week and seeing people of our generation more interested is great. And honestly, it always surprises me that there is hesitancy, I suppose, because when I travel to wherever I go for studies or for residencies or whatever, for projects, the art scenes are like my access points to get to know a community. Like even here in Nashville, and you know, being in this space, this is how I've learned of the city, is through the different like artist groups or art organizations. It's always been my sort of access point. And for people of our generation, the art world is cool. You know, I still think that's funny that is still catching on to Cayman, that like, yeah, the art world is cool.
Yeah,
it's
yeah,
cool
yeah.
Thing to do, you know?
But you know, Cayman's always a late adopter to everything, so.
We're getting there. We're getting, people like you, Reno, make it cool. So hey. We're getting there. We're getting there.
Hey, man, it's all of us making it cool. The biennials, I didn't even talk about them. But those make it cool. I think the biennials are the most popular things, to be honest with you. And that's the biennials that the National Gallery does is, it's everybody. Mm-hmm. And I think those are what really, when they started that like 4 years ago.
2019. And then the second one in 2021. And then it's already coming up again early.
Coming up again, yeah. Those, to me, that initiative is the most important thing it's almost like a certificate stating that there is enough art happening in this country that we can bottle it all up and curate a show around it and really show off what's going on. And it brings a lot of people from it's like a cross-pollination thing. It brings a lot of different people from a lot of different backgrounds who may or may not be into art, but they know someone who's in the show. And I think the biennial is probably the most important thing that's been happening, in my opinion. Plus, they give out the prizes and the grants, and it helps. Like Nasaria's show that's on right now at the National Gallery was because she won the prize at the biennial. And like, it's just stuff like that to me that's important. Like the more initiatives we have like that, that's what makes Cayman super, that's the buzz, you know, because people get excited for the biennial.
Yeah, and I think it's a dialogue as well, you know, it's mm-hmm. We as the institution want to provide opportunities that, you know, people can aspire to, and then in turn, you know, that encourages more people to get involved. So it's this mutual kind of collaboration and growth, you know, if we create this infrastructure like the biennial that people say, oh, wow, that's a really cool show that I could take part in maybe in 2 years time. And, you know, there's that kind of incentive. And then, you know, it kind of elevates and gets people out of their shells.
Out of their little bubble. The fear bubble that we were talking about, getting people out of their little, like, it's okay to be uncomfortable a little bit. You know?
Yeah, and it's great because, you know, then it it's something that's to be built on every 2 years as well. You know, who will come out for the next show? Who's going to come to the next call? You know, because there can be so many amazing artists on Island who, you know, we've never heard of before and never seen. And then they submit to a biennial or another open call. And we're like, oh, wow, this is amazing that this talent is here on Island.
Yep.
It's gross.
Yep. It's a beautiful thing.
Yeah. Well, I think that's a positive note to end on. Any final thoughts?
I'll just say it's really cool. Thanks, Jessica, for putting this together. I think this was a good idea, actually. And I think maybe it was earlier today or last night when I was really thinking about coming into this conversation with Reno that I started to recognize what you were saying, Jessica, about how many different overlays we've had. And we've taken different paths, but are in a very similar position right now.
Thank you for joining us on another episode of ArtBeat. If you'd like to learn more about our Business of Art program, visit nationalgallery.org.ky for upcoming events or give us a call at 945-8111. See you next week, and until then, visit us at the National Gallery on the Esterly-Tippetts Highway from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Saturday, where admission is always free.